This is an ABC podcast.
Warning, strong language alert.
Attention, please. This is the final call.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Burn Your Passport. I'm Nazim Hussain. Travelling is a tropical island where you pay for an authentic local experience and you can pay extra to avoid the massive health risks of doing so. This week it's all about... it's all about sickness. Excuse me. Comedian Nikki Britton searched for sympathy on the Italian railways.
If I'd have been able to sleep with Italian men my way out of this situation, I would have done it.
And New Zealander Guy Montgomery was just, forgive me for this, sick as brew.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.
I'm Nazim Hussain and I'm here with Guy Montgomery.
Hello, Nazim.
How's it going, bro?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Got a real-life Kiwi in the house.
Yeah, boy.
Woo. Welcome to Australia.
Thank you.
On behalf of everyone. We're
the custodian.
Yeah. But you've been here a bunch of times, right?
You'd have too much on to be the sort of, you know, national custodian at this point, wouldn't you?
Well, we sort of share the responsibility. Every week it's a new person, and this is my week.
Oh, wow. And you've carved out the time to do a podcast.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a very light job, actually.
Yeah.
You just got to welcome podcast guests. So that's you know, that's my
yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
This is a travel podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
How are you with travel?
I really like it, actually. It was always a dream of mine, sort of doing comedy. Mm. To do comedy within New Zealand was my first goal, and then to travel for comedy was my second goal. And then now I'm sort of in the midst of living this or enjoying, you know.
International.
Yeah,
now.
But it's actually, it's nothing like what you draw up in your mind's eye, is it? Because it's just, it grinds you down. It's exhausting.
If you describe it to anyone that doesn't have to travel for work, it sounds glamorous. Sounds like we're living the high life, you know, hotel to hotel, different towns, different people, audiences. Like, it sounds really cool, but it's not, is it?
No, well, it's a fine line to tread because on one hand it is really
cool.
I mean, this is by design,
but it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's absolutely exhausting.
And little inconveniences, do they piss you off a bit or not? You're pretty chilled. You seem like a chilled guy.
I'm pretty chilled out. I have sort of slowly started inheriting some of my father's travel habits. So he's a very he gets very anxious and testy towards airports. He has to arrive at an airport like 3 hours before a flight just because he's literally, you know, unbearable company if he's not at the airport any time before a flight.
Bloody hell.
And I sort of tried to shirk that, and I would always show up to the airport. You know, I try and maximise my time away from the airport, so I'd pretty much show up and walk onto the plane. But what over time I started getting so anxious, you know, using this time not at the airport, that it was valueless. So I'm now arriving at airports very early. It's all mood dependent, really. There's no broad rule.
Yeah.
There's no catch-all. Yeah. Like, sometimes I go to an airport, I'll be the most relaxed person there, and then other times, someone who takes 10 seconds too long to get their laptop out of their bag will be like, have you never fucking travelled in your life before?
I get very, when I'm behind people in the queue, I will look at them and I want them not to fumble because they're wasting my time. But when it's my turn, man, I freak out. My fingers get all shaky and stuff like that. And then if the laptop, I actually tell people to go in front of me. I'm like, no, you go in front of me. I'm like, just, it's all right, take it easy, relax.
How often do you get to fly without a bag?
Even on the day trips, up and back, I feel like I need to take a bag. Otherwise, I'm just like...
Or you feel like you look like a lunatic.
Yeah, like some crazy, like I'm going to do something on the plane.
There's nothing more glamorous than flying without a bag.
You do that.
Really, but I just think it's a very cool look.
It also looks like you're just going to go somewhere and buy your clothes wherever you go. Like, I don't care. I don't need to pack them. I don't wear clothes twice.
I think in my head, I think it looks cooler than it probably does to the other passengers. Look at that poor bastard.
Someone probably thought, he left his bag at the McDonald's.
Yeah, it was the same thing as, you know, in TV shows and movies, you'd see people sitting at a restaurant or at a bar by themselves. And you think, God, that looks cool. And then if you ever try doing that by yourself, you're like, I am really embarrassed right now.
I've got my phone out at all times.
Yeah. Well, try it without a phone. Everyone becomes quite fearful of you.
What do you do? You just look
at people or
like, your nails.
Like, what do you do?
I don't know.
What were people doing?
I would just read the menu several times.
Yeah.
That's giving me a slight anxiety just thinking about it.
I'm sorry to
do that. I might try
that
as a challenge tonight.
Yeah.
Just go hang out by myself with no phone.
I take a book usually.
Yeah, but if you've got a book, there's something to do.
Yeah.
No book. No menu even. What would you do without a menu, no book, no phone?
It's just you and your thoughts.
Yeah, so you're just looking, what'd you look at? Just look at the glass.
You look at, you try and strike up chat with the barkeep. Usually you'll get a few dates, maybe some first dates to observe in there.
Oh, so you just people watch.
What? It's either that or you're just literally staring at a fixed point for an hour, stressing everyone out.
Yeah. So, if there's foot traffic, I'm fine. If it's just an empty cafe and it's just me and the waiter who's finished his small talk, that's probably my nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't know what to do.
I feel that.
Social anxiety.
But if you travel a lot, you'd be familiar with eating meals alone, but you've got your phone for company.
Yeah, and headphones.
Yeah, yeah.
Headphones. The headphones are the best. I didn't even sometimes have stuff playing. I just put them on so I don't have to talk to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds so bad because I'm doing a podcast. I like talking to people.
Yeah.
But I also don't like talking to people.
No, but this is a controlled environment in which we're talking.
Yeah, we've decided mutually.
That's right.
There's consent here. So what, you've had some horror, you've had a horror flight, haven't you?
Oh, well, recently, yeah, I had a, I had a really bad run. So there is nothing worse. Well, actually, there was something. So I moved to America. I moved to New York
in
October of last year.
Oh.
Well, I know. That's what everyone says to you
stuff
before you leave.
On.
And then you arrive and everyone goes, what the fuck are you doing in our country?
What were you doing? Were you working or were you just...
Chasing the dream, baby.
Which dream?
Stand-up comedy in New York City.
Wow. That's the dream.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. It is. It's a hell of a dream to have and an even harder one to pursue. But so I was there... And then I've come back to do the festival circuit between Australia and New Zealand. And I became quite, before I did Brisbane, I got quite sick with tonsillitis that went undiagnosed by a GP in Auckland the day before I left. So I got over to Brisbane. I was doing shows, but I was just I had no energy or was not very well. And so after a few days, I went and saw a GP in Brisbane who said, oh, you've got bacterial tonsillitis. So he prescribed me some penicillin. Started getting better after a few days, and then the day when I thought, oh, I'm turning a corner here, my wisdom teeth started coming through. And so at this point, my entire oral situation is in utter disarray. I have 9 ulcers. I can barely swallow, I'm not sleeping a lot. The only hour of the day I get any respite from my ailments is when I'm performing, because it's like Dr. Showbiz comes in and
it just goes to the side.
And then you get an hour and a half worth of adrenaline in which time you have to get home. Otherwise, you're going to be feeling quite crook while you're out.
Yeah.
So I did all that. And I was meant to go to Adelaide the week afterwards. And I was holding off thinking, I'll get better. But it was too much. On the Sunday before it, I was in the most excruciating pain I can remember of my life. Saw an emergency dentist. He said, you've got to get these teeth out or they're going to get infected. And so he numbed me up real good. I did the show that night. And I changed my plans to go from Brisbane to Adelaide. I changed my... a flight to go Brisbane to Christchurch, which is where my folks live. It's where I grew up.
Mm.
And so go and see the old family dentist. He can rip out the teeth. No wockets.
What? You didn't want to do it in Brisbane?
No, I had to do that show. And then I didn't want to be like, I had nowhere to stay the next day. I was planning on leaving Brisbane on the Monday anyway.
Right.
The next morning, I board my flight for Brisbane to Christchurch at about 8 a.m. I haven't been sleeping or eating enough or drinking enough fluids, as I detailed.
Mm.
Felt pretty all right.
As I detailed.
Yeah. Felt pretty all
right. Sounds like a police report.
Yeah. Felt pretty all right in the airport and get on the plane, start familiarising myself with my co-passengers, a lovely couple who are heading over to the west coast of New Zealand, one of the most eye-catching pieces of natural beauty you'd be lucky enough to see.
This police report just got really fancy.
Yeah. And I was sitting there and remember after I'd met them, I was like, I actually don't want to talk, you're saying don't want to talk to anyone. Like, I feel horrible.
You put on some imaginary headphones?
Yeah, no, I put on the real headphones. Yeah, they would have already sold it. No, I put on some real headphones and I was watching a television program on my phone. I downloaded it.
Uh-huh.
So I was watching that, and as I was watching that, I felt more tired than usual. You know, I've felt tired before, but this is the tiredness where it's like, I feel really tired here.
It's like so sleepy, you're dreaming of sleep as well.
Yeah. And so I start going, shutting my eyes, and I'm like, no, we'll just get through the safety briefing and the takeoff, and then it'll be okay.
Oh, okay.
So then I go back, try and reconcentrate, and this time I feel somehow even more tired.
Oh, no.
And I go down, and then the next thing I know, I come to, and there's 8 people around me. All assembled, and they're going, you okay, mate? You okay? You've had a seizure.
What?
You've just had a seizure. You okay? And I am familiar, trying to recalculate what's happening here, and I go, yeah, I'm okay. Like, the first thing I'm thinking is, you are not getting me off this plane, I have to get to Christchurch. And so I start very loudly reassuring everyone that I'm okay. And they'll go, no, you've had a seizure. And I start freaking out because I'm like, oh, these people must hate. Because the worst place anyone can be is on an aeroplane that's not in the air. Like, people hate that. And so we were just taxiing to take off. And I'm going, no, we're all right. We're all right. It's fine. Sorry, everyone. Sorry about that. And then the steward comes over and he's like, we're going to need to get some paramedics on board. And I'm still entertaining the idea of flying. And the paramedics come, you know, this is all sort of half an hour's worth of dilly-dallying. Then the paramedics come on, they walk me to the front of the plane. I sit down, they ask me what happened. I tell them, and they go, you're not going on this plane. And so then I go down in the ambulance and we go flying across the tarmac. The highlight of this entire experience, undoubtedly. So
you're in an ambulance with the sirens and everything?
No sirens, but we're on the tarmac.
And yeah, that's pretty sick.
Quite low too. Healthy that low to the tarmac.
I know, that's never. I don't know anyone that's ever been that close to the tarmac.
And so I wind up going to this learning hospital in Brisbane.
What?
It's like a hospital where they're teaching students simultaneously. And so I get given the full, you know, I get every variation of a brain scan you can have. Like, they are so rigorous with me. And I'm just, so it's 9 hours just there, still an absolute, you know, my teeth are exploding. I've still got multiple ulcers. I can't consume any of the food that they're giving me.
All these kids look like I've got a test patient here.
Yeah. And then, the paramedics are trying to.
Also learn a paramedics?
No, the paramedics seem to know what was happening. But they're trying to sort of get to, you know, trying to calm or like, you know, keep me calm. So they're asking questions about why I'm in Brisbane. And so it's either I lie or I have to say I'm here for the comedy festival. Oh. So they tell all of these pupils, they go, oh, yeah, for the comedy, you know, and so they're trying to get me to run gear.
We'll get you to tell jokes.
Yeah, and this is not entirely fair because it's a credit to the Royal Women's Hospital of Brisbane. They took remarkable care of me. I was discharged that evening, spent a night in the hospital.
9 hours doesn't sound like...
Well, no, there was a lot of waiting, but...
So what was remarkable about the care?
Well, I mean...
You just felt like you had to say that, didn't you?
Yeah. Cool. I didn't pay anything. That's what was remarkable. And that's why I'm talking about this America thing. Because my gratefulness was, if this had happened to me in America, you know, like for that situation...
They would have just shot you dead on the street.
Yeah, exactly. But for that situation to unfurl, it's like for the first thought you have to be like, oh, I hope I can, you know, I hope I'm covered for this. I hope they can take me. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
To be sick abroad is a real nightmare. Mm-hmm.
But in Brisbane, that's a cheap place to get sick. Well, being in a room of medical students or like people learning stuff is pretty. Like one of my friends, actually, he always gets a massage from the massage school place because it's like $5.
Yeah, a lot of people get haircuts from those places.
Haircuts.
As well. The massage students do haircuts as well.
my friend, she was studying naturopathy, which is like one of those not real
like a naturopath.
Things. Yeah, like it's pretty bullshit. Well, if any of you are naturopaths, I mean, good on you.
Yeah.
But we all know it's not real, is it? Anyway, people pay you, so there's obviously some value.
Yeah. Well, anyway. The money you're taking is real.
The money you're taking is real. The spiel that you give them.
The service you're providing is...
Anyway, so she goes, oh, do you mind coming in? I've got my final exam or something. I just need to test patients. So I was like, oh, yeah, sure, it'll just be me and her. So I went in, and there was like 30 students there, and they started asking me every personal question, like, how often do you have sex? How does it feel? How often do you go to the toilet? What does your shit look like? What consistency? What color is your shit? Like, all this is gross. I wasn't sure if it was like a hidden camera prank.
Yeah.
And then they did this thing. They were all looking at my eyes and like graphing my retina. But then at the end of the whole thing, I was like, I felt really violated. And then they actually they drew up my eye on this big thing, and they said, oh my God, and they were all really astonished. I was like, whoa, is it good or bad? They said, you've got the smoothest retinas that we've ever seen ever. Apparently that means I've got an amazing immune system. And people were like, they took a photograph with me with the whole class because I had the smoothest retinas I've ever seen.
Is this
me holding my retina? My
naturopaths.
Yeah, the naturopath. So,
and what do you wear this as a badge? But you've bought into it.
Now I've actually bought it. So by the way, I do believe in naturopathy now. Yeah. Just having remembered that, it's pretty legit.
They got the smoothest retinas I've ever seen.
And maybe that's their business model. They just compliment people's retinas.
Yeah,
and then you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a lot of people listening along at home who have been to a naturopath, and they'll be thinking those pricks.
They didn't compliment my retinas, but So look, you're alive though. How'd you get your teeth out then?
I changed the flight to next morning, and my appointment was the morning after that. So I went and I was put under, I didn't get anesthetic. I got sort of, No. They put something in my arm. Yeah, right, yeah. You're not unconscious, but you can't remember anything. It's quite a freaky thing to happen.
Yeah.
And they just ripped four teeth out of my mouth.
Shit. Well, I got two of them out. Oh, maybe three of them very recently. And I was conscious but numb in the mouth. But yeah, he was trying to pull. You can actually feel him like really pull. And then he actually had to put one foot up on my chair. Like he was really. I wasn't sure if he was going to fly across the room.
No, I picked some friends up after getting it done, and one of them, like the teeth was just smashed to bits, and they had both. I think they had like almost both feet on the chair. I mean, well, wouldn't you? It's a teeth that's very firmly rooted in the gum, which is literally all the tooth has known how to do for its entire adult life.
That's its purpose. Yeah, to be in the head.
Yeah. Well, no, don't get me out of here. This is home.
Yeah.
I've still got mine, actually. I just remembered they're in my toiletries bag back at my.
Why do you have them in your toiletries bag?
Well, because as I was going under, the last thing I said to the dentist is I want to keep all of my bodily parts. He's like, "What do you want me to do with the teeth?" He's like, "Do you want me to biff them?" I was like, "No, I want all my bodily parts." That's what I said before I went down. And then having said this, I can't very well turn around and throw them out, can I?
I mean, you could use that if you're ever going to get mugged overseas. You could go, "Mate, you know what happened to this guy?" And you can pull out your teeth.
Yeah.
But the way you describe your seizure, it's like when I've fallen asleep somewhere and I wasn't supposed to fall asleep, then someone will be like, "Did you just fall asleep?" And I'll be like, no.
Yeah, well, it was like that. So I was convulsing for 20 to 30 seconds.
Have you ever had a seizure before?
No. But so, and then I saw a GP. So after all of this, I went and saw a neurologist. I was meant to see a neurologist in Brisbane, but I didn't because there was no time. So I went back and saw a GP in New Zealand, and he said, "What's happened is you've fainted, but because you're on a plane and your body's upright, there's no means for you to lie down." Like if I could have just gone and gotten horizontal, then it would be fine. It would just be a sort of a light faint.
So it's like a glitch in a game.
Exactly, yeah. But since my body was upright and it couldn't get horizontal, that's when I started convulsing.
So it's just like a Control-Alt-Delete situation. It just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, system override.
Bloody hell, that's like an error 404.
Look at me now.
Look at you now, mate.
What am I, a fully rendered website?
look, I'm glad you haven't had one seizure this whole interview.
No.
So you've obviously...
Let's put a pin in it and not run the risk of that being how we book in the interview.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you.
You people are sick. There are tiny creatures in some parts of the world that want to kill you, but for some reason, you still want to go there anyway. Dr. Deb is a defensive strategy you barely even deserve. You go to the doctor and the doctor immunizes you and then says, "All right, you also need this, this and this." Go to your travel doctor and they'll give you those injections or whatever. How do you pitch those to the patients?
Well, look, there are things which are low risk. There's a disease called Japanese encephalitis, which is about 1 in 100,000 travellers, which seems like it's pretty rare. Like you're more likely to have your parachute fail to open.
Yeah.
But if you catch this disease, you die or you get permanent brain damage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, do you really want to put your holiday at risk and your brain at risk by catching these diseases? One dose of vaccine will cure you or stop this disease for the rest of your life. So it really becomes a bit of a philosophical question as to whether you want to be covered or not.
That's a good pitch. It's like life insurance. Like,
yes, it is. So, absolutely.
So basically, do you just go through all the diseases in the world and go, "You should try this, give us another 50
Which
bucks.
One would you like today? No, there's a list of probably 15 most important diseases that we go through and then we'll schedule it. And rabies is a really good example.
Oh, yeah. It's got a real bad rap, rabies.
It's got a really bad rap. 1% of travellers to Thailand get a rabies bite. And if you get rabies and you don't get it treated properly,
If you have rabies and then you bite someone else, they get rabies, right?
That's right, absolutely. There are these really sad wards in Madras which have locks on them because you put the rabies patients in there so they can't kind of wander off. It's really terrible.
Why can't they just wander off and just not bite people? Like, can't you put a muzzle or something?
Well, the thing with rabies is that the virus gets into your brain to the point where you have to go and bite people. That's what it does. It's really
so it's like a zombie thing.
Yeah, it's like a zombie thing.
Next up, Nikki Britton, a comedian who has survived more than many.
Bernie Passport, Nazim Sain's my name, and I'm joined by Nikki Britton.
Hello. How's it going?
Welcome to the podcast. Take a seat. You've already said you've taken a seat.
Oh, it's a very comfortable one. Thank you. I'll take it again.
You're doing a show right now.
I am.
As a grandma.
Yeah, I am. I'm doing a kids comedy show as a grandma. It's called Grandma Is Not Growing Up, and it's
Yeah, she's this sort
funny
of,
title.
Ah, thanks, mate. Yeah, she's very silly, very warm, outrageous grandma who does all the things that grandma shouldn't do.
Like what? No spoilers, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, grandma has decided that she's lived her life too long under the thumb, under the oppressive thumb of what other people say she should do.
Expectations.
Yes.
Of grandmotherly expectations.
Exactly.
What are grandmothers supposed... What are the expectations of a grandma?
Well, I guess you're supposed to be a bit sensible and you're supposed to follow the rules and stuff like that. No. She's decided no, thank you.
Wow.
She's busting out and
a rebel.
Yeah. She's a rebel and she's going back in time to, figure out all the dreams that she actually never got to pursue because she was being told what she should do.
Man, this grandma sounds like the sort of grandma that my mum is.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't stick to any rules. In fact, she goes to McDonald's just to pick up newspapers for free and all the breakfast spreads and stuff.
I love it.
That's breaking the rules, isn't it?
Yeah, but... grandmas can get away with it.
Get away with that.
Yeah.
Know? They just look sweet and innocent. Except, you know, like apparently the people that, this is sad though, but the theft, I think the demographic that commits the most, apparently the elderly in Australia. Apparently. I could be completely wrong. But because, you know, the pension's just not enough.
That's true. The pension's not enough. And they probably feel like this country owes me something.
Yep.
And kind of fair enough.
Go for it.
But then also, like...
I mean, don't go for it if you... I mean, go for it, whatever. I don't know what the legal... Anyway, but as you're saying...
Oh, you know, just if you can get away with it, if you're
I mean, I don't know about bank robberies. It's always like petty stuff. Like
I'd love to see it though.
Oh man, that'd be sick.
I mean, a bunch of elderly people robbing a bank.
I would be more scared of like elderly people robbing a bank because, you know, if they've seen life and they know how easily it can go.
Yeah.
So if they've got a gun in their hand, they're happy to take life.
That's it. They're like, I'm at the end of mine. Bring it.
Yep. Hey, so you had a is it a bad travel story?
I've got a series of terrible travel stories, but I think definitely the one that might be being referred to happened of May last year.
What happened
in May last year?
2017. Australia.
Oh, it began in Australia.
Oh, wow. This is okay.
It was destined to be such a glorious trip, Nazim. Such a glorious trip. I took a 3-month contract in London to introduce an amazing program into kids' hospitals over there where you go in and it's kind of distraction therapy and diversional therapy and essentially...
Where you just give them smartphones.
Yeah, you just give every child an iPad and say, enjoy Candy Crush, and then they have a great time. It's kind of like using clowning, using comedy, using all the skills.
All your tools.
All my tools.
Yep.
All the tools in the basket. Mm-hmm. And they said, Nikki, would you like to come up and sort of launch this program in a different country? And
wow.
I was like, oh.
Wait, so this is a UK-based program?
Yeah, it's a partner charity in the UK who were beginning this program for the first time over there. And so I was going to go over and I was going to help take magic to these kids in hospitals. That was what's supposed to happen.
Okay.
That was what's supposed to happen.
Oh, no.
I decided before I started the contract, why don't I take 3 glorious weeks to myself, a bit of an eat, pray, love kind of, you know, a little bit of time in
treat
Italy.
Treat yourself.
Yeah, treat myself. Yeah. You know, it's been a big year.
Yeah, grandma's
Nikki's
had
worked
a big
hard.
Year.
Exactly. Let's go over there and walk national parks and eat pasta and do all the things you dream of doing when you're
34 Palace.
And single. Yeah. You know,
Try and make the guards laugh.
That's it. All the things. Yep. I want to do all the things. And so I got off the plane from Australia in Italy and I got on a train going up the beautiful coast to Cinque Terre. Ooh. So this like, you know.
I've only seen photos of this.
So had I.
Yeah.
I'd only ever seen photos. These beautiful 5 fishing towns on the coast.
Oh.
Just gorgeous colours. And
you were in your desktop photo, the back of that one.
I was in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was finally in it, Naz. All these dreams were coming true. And then... so excited as I was. It was summertime in Italy.
I don't know if I want to hear the rest of it because right now it's really happy. If the story just ended here, that would be it. That would be good.
Strap in. I wish I had. It was summertime in Italy and the crowded train was quite full, obviously a tourist train.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my suitcase and I waited at the doors for the train doors to open so I could step off the train, my very first steps onto Italian soil in this beautiful, beautiful town of Cinque Terre. And so
the doors opened, and the carriage of the trains in Italy is kind of about a metre, maybe a metre and a half above the platform. So there's these steel...
What the hell?
Yeah, oh. There's like a couple of steel steps that you have to step down. Unfortunately, however, I had a very heavy suitcase and I lifted my suitcase out of the carriage and onto the platform.
Oh, no.
And as the hordes of people behind me saw the head go down, my head dipped down, they thought, golden, we're off. Here we go. There's heaps of us to get off.
Oh, shit.
We all better get off immediately. And so my head is down, and there was a crowd heave. What? I get pushed out of the train, fall on my right ankle, break my ankle, hit my head, pass out, come to.
Ouch.
to a voiceover in the train station saying, passengers, please make sure you keep an eye on your valuables because pickpockets operate in this area. And I come to see my phone, my passport, my wallet just strewn across the platform.
So not only do they use you as like a human red carpet into Italy, but they were stealing your stuff on the way out.
Well, yeah. I mean, no one stole my... to their credit, no one stole my stuff, which is very kind. They did, however, step over me and I assume go and take some glorious photographs of the ocean. So I was strewn on this train platform, not realising I'd broken my ankle. And then I went, oh, well, quick, you better get all your things. Yeah. Gather them up. And I stood up and I immediately like shivers went through my whole body. I started sweating profusely. I was like, there's something wrong south of my knee.
Oh, crap.
What's going on?
Did you yell?
I didn't yell. I just whimpered to myself. That was the one who could really
People probably looked at you and thought, she's so emotional to be here.
Yeah, probably.
Must have been a lifelong dream.
People like, wow, that single lady in her 30s is really, she's really making her dreams
come true. She's ticking her bucket list off.
Yeah. So I started walking on this ankle and I was like, it doesn't seem right.
You're not supposed to walk on a broken ankle, Nikki.
Who knew, Naz? Yeah. Who knew at that point?
No.
I mean, it was black and enormous.
Oh, damn.
And then I had to walk for about a kilometre to get anywhere because the glory of Cinque Terre is that it's so quaint that there's no cars on roads. Like, there's no actual cars.
Yeah, yeah.
The roads are teeny tiny and all windy. And so there was no way that I could get out of this train station. I had to carry my bag up steps and then... I finally got to my accommodation and I said, is there any way you could please get me some ice? Yeah. And they went, ugh. And they went out and got me some ice.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, oh, we've only got heroin.
I would have taken it. I would have taken it. They got me ice and then they came back and I said, is there any chance you could just get me some dinner? Because I've been on like a 24-hour flight and I think I'm in a lot of pain.
Aww.
And they were like, this is not our job description.
So I just... your ankle?
Yeah, well, I didn't know it was broken at the time. The next day, I got a $227 Australian taxi ride to an X-ray place, radiographers.
Yeah.
To get an X-ray that said there were no broken bones.
Oh.
And I went to a doctor, and the doctor and I did our very best with my broken Italian and his broken English to talk about what was going on. I mean, he also. It was quite a long consultation. I could tell that because he smoked 7 cigarettes during the consultation. And the ash fell on what was an actual broken ankle. But at the time he said, it's fine. It's just a bad sprain. Best thing you can do is wrap it up for a couple of days, but then walk on it. Really start using it to get the blood moving. So I spent the next 2 weeks schlepping around Italy. Just like putting the pain aside, going, it's okay. Don't be a pussy. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Just hearing the bones snap against each other.
Pretty much. So I had to get out of Cinque Terre because if you've ever been, it's just hills and stairs. Mm. And
just beautiful hills and stairs.
Just stunning, stunning. Yeah. I couldn't tell you. I didn't even see the ocean. I just saw the inside of my bunker of a hotel room.
Oh, man.
Which is all I could afford. And then I had to schlep across the country to Venice. Because, A, it was a long weekend. It was a holy weekend, some, like, national holiday weekend. So there were nothing was open. It was the only place with an orthopedic hospital that I could go to. So I went. And also, it's the only place. It's, like, the flattest place in Italy. I started Googling topographic maps of Italy to try and find the place that had the least stairs.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what I was
like. Where are the least stairs?
Well, Venice, because it's on water level.
What?
It's literally all sea level.
I bet you wanted someone to come and give you some distraction therapy.
Oh, my God, Nazim, what I would have given. I literally, if I'd have been able to
sleep with Italian men my way out of this situation, I would have done it.
Did you have insurance or something?
I had insurance, and I called the insurance people. Eventually, when I schlepped from Venice to London, and I got an MRI, and they said, "Nikki, you've got two broken bones and no ligaments left on one side of your whole ankle."
Which foot is it?
The right one.
So is it?
That's why I have these sassy flat shoes.
Really, because of that?
Yeah, because I can't wear heels at the moment.
They're pretty cool shoes, but
thanks, mate.
But you have to wear them at all times.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Just like a permanent reminder of that trip. And I can ask you, you got this massive bag here.
Yeah.
What's in it? You brought a bag into the studio. Two bags.
I did. I bought a couple bags.
Hand luggage thing.
That's it. That's just medical supplies now in case I go down again. It's just an orthopedic boot in that red bag. Right?
Is that grandma in there?
That is, yeah. That's everything I need for the grandma show.
So if you ever get like, if you're going through security and they need to swab your bag, if they ever open that up, how do you explain?
It just looks like I've robbed a $2 store.
Really? That's it doesn't look like you're trying to commit crime as someone else.
Maybe if they listen to this podcast, they're going to be onto us. They'll be like, "No, that's
right,
a Nikki.
That's the one. They're about to rob a bank." In 30 years. Well, I went to the States a while back, and when I went through LA airport, long interrogation. I've talked about it before. 4 hours. At the end of it, they go, "All right, we're going to let you go," because they asked me if I was a terrorist, if I intended on being a terrorist, if what would I would say if someone asked me if I wanted to engage in terrorist related activities, blah, blah, blah. Oh. Anyway, once I was satisfied with all my answers, they said, "Can I look inside your hand luggage?" And in the hand luggage, I had an outfit for a character that I was playing.
Oh, God.
Called Imran Farooq, who's like a spiritual guru from southern Bangladesh and dresses like an Afghan, or in their minds, like a member of the Taliban. And they pulled out the outfit and they were like, "What the hell is this? This changes everything." I was like, "How does that change it? You're basically saying that I'm a terrorist, and in order for me to commit an act of terrorism, I need to wear my terrorist uniform." So they interrogated me for longer because of that.
Oh,
so
no.
So you got to have your story. I think grandma doesn't look very terroristy or very criminal.
Hopefully not.
No.
Hopefully. I mean, it is a kid's show, so I've made some terrible choices of the character if it does look like a terrorist.
But thanks heaps, Nikki.
Thanks for having me.
Attention, please. This is the final call.
Well, this has been Burn Your Passport, the podcast that blows the whistle on people even considering leaving their house. Don't even think about it. Hey, if you want to keep in touch, hit me up on the socials. Send me your travel stories. I'll read them out. I won't. But if you want to meet me, just come to the ABC. I'm here every week recording this thing. If you don't want to pay for a train ticket, just get my car. I've left it at the train station. Train station. It's the third car from the black number plate is A65. The spare keys are on the back left tyre. I'll meet you here.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.